The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 20th of January, 2020. On the podcast today, Cahill Frail, Executive Chairman of Open Orphan. ORPH ticker there, and Kyle discusses the significance of the completion of their merger with HVivo. Also on the podcast, David Signatera, Chairman of Live Company Group, provides a trading and operational update for 2019 and insights into the outlook for 2020. Plus, I also have David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil, and David talks about the planning inspector decision to uphold their appeal and grant planning consent for the development of their Wrestle oil field. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, if you want to see top 10 versions of both these lists, go to voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see them right there. And if you did receive an RNS via our free app today and you like to condense that RNS, give it a thumbs up within the app, and it could feature on this list. And of course, I'll read it out. It'll be on the front page. It'll get more widely shared.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Cahill Frail, Executive Chairman of Open Orphan. You're right, Cahill.
Justin, good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's the first time I've said that title for you. Of course, now that the greater entity is done, you've merged with HVivo, and it's looking very good, isn't it? I mean, before we get into it, as always, because there are people new to the story all the time, just give us now a summary of what Open Orphan is.
Justin, Open Orphan basically has gone from picking up one struggling little company called Venn 6-9 months ago. Today, we actually have a full-fledged CRO, pharma services with a focus on orphan drugs. Basically, we've a company that has done tens of millions for the past year, and both companies have been fully restructured. We have customers across Europe, and now when I say CRO, we're servicing big pharma companies, providing services that get their drugs approved.
Yeah, and you've revealed some more information this morning about the merger and the pipelines especially. So, in fact, first, take us through, because HVivo has got a lot going on there, isn't it? A lot of promise.
Yeah, look, HVivo has been around, had a market cap of 170 million just over a year and a half ago. It ran into some problems. It was a pharma services company since 1992. And in 7-8 years, God wanted to get the discovery of vaccines. And let's be honest, blew through an awful lot of money, hired too many staff. A new management team 18 months ago came in under Trevor Phillips and Tim Sharpington, CEO and CEO respective. They've done huge cutbacks. They've taken over 11 million out of the cost base annualized. They have it now coming close to profitability again. We've put the two companies together. I'm moving aside, up, across, whatever you want to call it, to executive chairman as the largest shareholder, and I'm underwriting and cornerstoning this funding round. I believe it's the best opportunity I've ever seen in many years. And I'm letting Trevor and Tim get on with running the integration and running now. We have a really good pharma service company based out of London, Paris, and Holland. So we've now got a really super business in our hands.
Yeah, and so you say there is a combined pipeline pretty much of 100 million, HVivo with 81 and Venn with like 10.5, so it's looking good, isn't it?
Yes, like really exciting. Who would have thought 6 months ago, I think you would have laughed at me if you would have said, Carl, we're going to have a 100 million pipeline of robots. This is not prospects. Look, on the Open Orphan side, we actually put in R&S, we have 10.5 million of signed contracts. Another 4 million about to be signed. Like that's a multiple of the best year any Venn ever had before. HVivo have 81, 82 million. Robust pipeline, they're not signed. One imminently signed in the coming weeks. And the rest of them, the management team, are very optimistic. So yes, what a transformation for us.
So Carl, when we started speaking, you know, when you first came to the market with the Open Orphan, you had sort of a target for an exit around about 2-3 years down the line. Now, more recently, you've been talking about an exit maybe even end of this year, or even summer, or the end of this year. Is that still the plan?
Yes, Justin. Like my view is what we're trying to do is mop up, fix, struggling little AIM companies. There's two of them, too many of them, all making losses. We've now picked up two, we've fixed them, we've turned them around. That gives us huge options later this year. I know some people are worried, say, why pick a company up and let's use the word, sell it on immediately. But my view is we will have the ability to look at exit options later this year. It might be the case of where shareholders, board members say, hey, why exit now? We can exit again in 6 or 12 months beyond here. But I want that option always on the table to allow investors, I'm the largest one, the ability to monetize their investment. So yeah, that look, that's the way, I've been honest, we keep the management teams hungry and keen in small companies.
Yeah. But I mean, your initial target, is that to just turn these around and make them profitable in the short term?
Yeah, look, we think we've taken two struggling AIM companies. Like last year, we've done the combination now. It's done about 30 million. We're valued today at 30 million, 1x revenues. Any other company in the pharma services space is valued at 2 to 3x revenues. The reason we're valued at 1x revenue just today is we're still loss-making and perceived to be loss-making. I think our RNS today makes clear those losses are coming to an end. Pretty soon, we've done a lot of things in Open Orphan to make sure to improve the prospects of profitability. HVivo team have done the same. So I think once the market realizes, hey, this company is profitable, you'll see a very big re-rating on our market cap and share price.
Yeah. And one thing a couple of people mentioned to me is that Carl, on your last couple of interviews, hasn't mentioned the databases, data side of the business. What's happening there, Cahill?
Oh, absolutely, Justin. Yes, just sometimes I get too excited about what we've got in HVivo and forget about what I have in my hands. No, the really exciting part of the database is we now actually have a huge database that we can actually import. HVivo have been around since 92, have a very large database of patient records, patient history, genomic data. We immediately are looking to monetize that in our platform. So absolutely, the Open Orphan Genomic Database is bigger, stronger, and getting better. And it was just remiss of myself in interviews to talk more about it. It's still an integral part of it. It's very low cost. There's virtually no money getting into it. We pre-funded that before IPO with our own cash. But now we have a huge data set. Company's been around for 30 years with, let's call it, say, a treasure trove of data that we're going to upload. So it is, again, part of the synergies.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned the synergies there, and now you can do a combined sort of phase one and phase two for companies. And at the end here, you say you're proposing a placing to raise about 5 million, underwritten 2.5 by you. So what's that money going to be used for?
Yes. What we're doing is that both companies are still marginally loss-making. So to put the two of them together, you'll see on it as well, the minimum fundraise is 2.5 million. That's the report in the accountants, says that's the minimum money we need for the next 18 months to keep them going. I personally underwrote that because I think it's a great opportunity. And the rest is basically just have some working capital, have a little bit of buffer, and to keep the show on the road to get us through the next year or two. And also, I'm going to a cornerstone investment because our plan would be, our last round was done at 5.6p. I'm very keen as the largest shareholder, as is the other existing institutional shareholders, to do this as a premium to the last round. We can't say where it'll be at, but we would like to do it to a premium to the market price, and also certainly a premium to the last round, which was 5.6.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, as always, Cahill, if someone's listening, likes the sound of this, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
We're one of the few AIM companies that still has a huge stake, owned by the management, led by myself, that's locked up for 3 years, that have put serious cash on the table. And this round, this placing, putting even bigger cash back on the table. That's the first one. Second one is, we're a team in a hurry. We're not messing around. We're consolidating. We said we'd acquire a number of companies 6 months ago. Here we are. And the third reason, we're now a grown-up company, and we're going to give shareholders options later this year, when we actually really drive the share price. So I think we have three things we watch. One, share price. Two, share price. And three, I think all small listed companies need to focus on those three very important things. And you get there by fixing everything else.
Marvellous stuff. Kyle, good to chat to you. And no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Justin, thank you very much. It's a pleasure as always.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Ciclatera, chairman of Live Company Group, LVCG is the ticker there. David, thanks for joining me.
Good evening.
Now, yes, evening where you are, isn't it? So, where are you at the moment?
Yeah, I'm in Seoul, actually. But, just arrived here yesterday and had a good day's activity and very happy to talk to you.
Marvellous stuff. So, last week you announced and released a trading and operational update. And I've got to say, I saw quite a few shareholders on social media saying there was good news in there, but it was buried and the share price took a big hit. So we're going to go through it and obviously have your take on it, because you're at the coalface there. You know exactly what's happening. I understand sometimes legally you have to put out these RNSs in a certain way, or depending on how the Nomad looks at it, whatever. So it's spun in a way that's not reflecting, you know, reality sometimes. So let's go through it. First and foremost, why do you think, David, I mean, there was a miss, you say, for this year's revenue, but why do you think the share price took such a big hit there?
Well, I think that people looked at it and they didn't see the good news. They perhaps read bad news, and people can buy or sell shares as they want to do. But I feel incredibly positive about the company. I think if we go through the facts were that the company made a profit of just under £750,000, as opposed to a loss of 0.4 million the previous year. So that's a change of 1.1 million. Remember, the company is its second year of trading, really. So we're now in profit, and we will grow as in profit. Every area that the company was in grew. We went from 34 events in 2018 to 71 in 2019. We grew our number of tours from 10 to 17 tours. We didn't have any IPs. We didn't even know the concept of owning an IP last January. And now we've got three IPs, major IPs. We just announced Peppa Pig, which is part of Hasbro. That was a couple of days beforehand. We've got Paw Patrol, SpongeBob, Snow Dog, etc. We've increased our number of global partners to 16. We announced on Friday we'd opened a partnership in Australia and one in Italy, both with seasoned people from the Disney world and the Fox world. And, you know, revenues have gone up. The number of countries we're trading had gone up. We also said we've announced 3 million of recognized revenue already for 2020. We announced a second version of the Brick Live show in Dallas. We announced a new show in Philadelphia, and we opened a new Brickosaurus show in Israel. And we also stated, we reminded everybody that we're funded to build 16 new tours in 6 months, which will deliver 31 tours. And, you know, to me, I was pretty proud of that, really. But somehow maybe we got it wrong. You can't say that the public's wrong. We're the people in the boat, and I don't think we should be putting out results in such a fashion again. So I'm keen to put, in my view, my record as we're sitting here.
Yeah, I think, you know, people see negatives straight away. I mean, the first line there, or the first sentence, you said, in respect of its outlook for 2020, I think, whilst the group has demonstrated a strong growth in 2019, results for the year are expected to be below market expectations. And I think that's what surprised the market. So let's tackle that. First of all, why are they below expectations? And have you addressed that now?
Well, the reality is that the house broker had a note out there. And yes, the note said we were going to make 1.1 million of EBITDA, and that's not our version, it's the broker's version. We delivered 0.7 million. And I think there's a lot of, we have not published numbers. Certain, you know, the broker has published numbers. So the comparison against that is what the Nomad put in that note, or insured was in that note. As I think a lot of people, we had quite a few people turn up to the meeting, which I, you know, orchestrated. And I think when we went through, they said, well, you made a profit. That's great. Yeah. I said, yeah, it is great. Actually, I'm a bit annoyed that it wasn't more, but yes, it was £750,000. we are going to increase that profit this year. And, you know, we don't have numbers in the market today, but we're going to increase that profit, and it's going to increase in 2021. We're a growing, profitable business. Now, one of the things I would also like to say to those people listening is we have chosen a path. We've chosen a path to build. So we are going out building more assets, more tours, because we believe that's the route to go. Obviously, when you build things, you have costs against it. So you're eating into what could be your profit. And I'll leave you and your readers with a thought. If I decided at the end of 2021 or the middle of 2021 to stop building for a period of time, everything's paid for. We just bring in revenue. Profits go up. What we're about is building the value of this company, building the value of a network, building a value of assets. They last for minimum 10 years. So, frankly speaking, this is a surge in demand. I sat with all of our foreign partners on the phone week before last. They all want stuff. I'm not even sure we can give them all the stuff. We're building as much as we can build. We have just done a deal with Peppa Pig. That's everybody knows Peppa Pig. We've got all the stuff from Nickelodeon. We've gone miles from a year ago, but people can buy their shares. They can sell their shares. Mm-hmm. As I said very nicely, my shares are not for sale, even if I wanted to sell them or could sell them. The reality is I believe in this company. I believe in its value. And frankly, we turned a profit. Yeah. And that's, to me, the key.
Yeah, well, I think people have overlooked the fact that you've grown, and just because they've seen that below market expectations, which was the broken note, pretty much. But you did mention that you had lower than expected license and content fees from China, fewer corporate bills, and lower returns from BritLife Show and NEC.
I will, if you put the rational reason why it was 0.7 as opposed to the broker's forecast of 1.1, is two things happened. We did not achieve the numbers we'd hoped for at the NEC. And secondly, our numbers in China were down. The numbers in China, actually, China is a difficult place to do business with. We believed that they were going to sign a major contract by the end of December. Actually, that contract's been delayed. Hasn't been decimated, it's been delayed. Mm-hmm. So that number affected our, if you like, forecast number, or forecast by other people. The NEC show, I think we're taking a different view. The different view is we promoted that show. I'm not sure we should promote our own shows. We should be in a business of partnership. So we, as we discussed with our shareholders who were present the other day, this year, we will not be promoting the show in the NEC. We will be co-promoting shows in the UK. And we announced a new show at Wembley Stadium, you know, just after the Euros this year, actually promoted by the originator of the Brit concept, Clive Morton. We've also decided to do more in Aberdeen, Liverpool, and we have one other area which we're going to be promoting in the UK. They all guarantee profits, and they spread the range and geography of the BritLife brand.
Okay, so that, I mean, that, like I said, that's the lower returns from NEC is okay. I mean, going forward, that's fine. There's no problem there.
No, I don't think so. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's already out of next year's numbers. But as we've said, we've replaced it with the model we have for shows has been either someone pays us a license fee and gets on with it, or basically we work with the venue. Mm-hmm. And the venue, what I call the Monaco model, where they cover their costs. We do the same in France. We do the same in Germany. We did the same with Liverpool. We do the same with Aberdeen, where it's like a partnership. Mm-hmm. So it's only an upside for us. That's how we're going to work Wembley. And frankly, we feel confident about that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And generally, I mean, like I said, the thing is, this was looking back, the figures are already there, done, 2019. It's what's important is 2020 and 2021, like you say, and you're very confident these 2 years will continue your growth, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. The growth for I know the numbers. You would not expect me to say them now, but the numbers that I know for 2020 and 2021 are a significant increase on the numbers that we posted for 2019. Now, remember, these are unaudited numbers. These are just us wanting to... I wanted to share with our... This is why I'm a little saddened. The idea of the meeting, the call to arms on the 17th, was to share with shareholders where we were. Mm-hmm. And frankly, we'll be releasing quarterly statements going forward. I think it's important that our shareholders know how we're doing, whether it's badly or well. I happen to know it's going to be well. We've done £3 million before we've even hit January for this coming year. Yeah. So I am this was a startup business that's now in profit. Mm-hmm. It's got a global network that we've built. It's basically got IP relationships that are fantastic. It's got growing asset-based models. And I repeat my stuff. If I stopped building or the company stopped building, the profits would go up. We choose to build more to grow more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff, David. Good to chat to you. And as always, if you can now, for people who like the sound of what you're talking about but are not yet following the story, if you could, in summary, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think that the company owns its own assets. It owns its own global network. As you can probably hear from the tone of my voice, the managers are passionate about the product. Mm-hmm. And we believe in the product and we're part of the product, shareholders in the future. I can only say that price is very low now. So that is basically a fact of life. I am going to do everything within my power to deliver numbers that will surprise people. And with those numbers, I believe that the value of the company will increase.
Marvellous stuff, dear. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack All. UJO is the ticker there. David, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you, Justin.
Yeah, now you've had some nice news out at last. The Wrestle development granted planning consent on appeal. About time this came through, and we'll dig into this and the significance of this and what it means for you and, of course, shareholders. Before we do, as always, David, I know it's not all about Wrestle, but it's a big part of your business there, but just summarise Union Jack Oil for us, if you could, please.
Yes, of course. So Union Jack is traded, the shares are traded on AIM, or on the alternative investment market, and effectively we take interest in high-profile wells, very late stage, as late as possible, where we literally just buy prior to drilling, and we invest our money in taking interest in those wells. And so far we've been extremely lucky. We've our geologists have done a real cracking job in bringing us some nice projects, such as Wrestle, which is our first ever discovery, and West Newton, Biscothorpe, Keddington. No, we've got a nice portfolio of projects to be working on, and hopefully add some serious value to the company in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And just take us through, I mean, because this planning consent has been dragging for a while, isn't it? So
you could say that again. It's been over 3 years, and it's so difficult. We've attended, I could go to Scunthorpe now with my eyes closed. I've been up there so many times for meetings and everything. And it's a terrible shame that it's taken this long. But anyway, we got the result. It's no use prognosticating and thinking, what could have been. We've been granted permission now to produce from Wrestle. So the next step is bring the field into production ASAP. And we'll be working with the operator on that, doing everything we can to help. And we, of course, with the place we did before Christmas, we were very, very cash rich, which is very, very good in these tough times.
Yeah. Well, take us through the potential here of Wrestle and you know, significance of what it means for shareholders.
It's very simple. The significance for us is it takes us from being a company which has been in the red. That's what happens when you invest money into these projects. Until you produce and get revenue through, you will be in the red. The difference to our company now is that we've got a 500 barrel a day cap on this, which means that our share will give us 137 plus barrels of oil a day. If you add that to Keddington and Fiskerton Airfield, you'd probably be looking about 200 barrels a day for us. That's no, for an onshore company, that's no mean feat. It's big potato for us, because obviously the costs aren't the same as being offshore. So at today's oil price, you'd be talking about a revenue stream for us of $3 million a year at today's price. The project is robust to down to $35. Production costs run between $8 and $10 a barrel. So if you just do your simple math there, we'll be certainly in the black from Wrestle, which is a great milestone for our company.
Yeah, and take us through that. I mean, so it'll transform you financially. And when is this expected to start happening, the production from here now?
Well, hopefully it should take around about 6 months. So by June, July, we could be up there opening up the site, which would be terrific. You know, it's a timetable. You know what timetables are like. You always have a month plus delay. That's what happens with exploration and production, any company really. But you know, the main thing is there's no excuse now not to get the finger out and get this production up and running into the company with the revenue scheme.
Yeah, it must have been a massive sigh of relief when you got this news, wasn't there?
You can say that again. That's if it's a word bigger than massive, yes, bigger than that even. Because you never know. You know, you're always worrying. You think, well, what if this the inspector didn't like this? What if he didn't like that? Not that there's any reason not to, because the council never gave evidence. But we were awarded full costs as well. And anyone that would like to go on to the inspectorate site and read what the inspector said, you know, not very flattering for some people. But I say it's no use. Terrible shame, Justin, but it came to this, really, but anyway, it's happened. We got permission. Like I said earlier, no use prognosticating. We got permission. That's all it takes now.
Yeah, it's just so frustrating for you, like 3 years. But now, like I say, you're out of the end of that tunnel. There's light there at the end of the tunnel now. And so it moves forward. You're just so annoying it took so long to get here. But, you know, it's good news. So, excellent stuff, David. And, you know, as always, if you could, if someone's liking the sound of this and not yet following the story, just give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, as I always say, there's always risk to any exploration, regardless of what the product is. There's always risk and time delays and things like that, but I think we've got a cracking board. We're very, very transparent, and we always say, you know, hackneyed old saying, we always try and do as it says on the tin.
Yeah.
Hopefully no horrible surprises. We put a lot of work into this company to make it happen.
Yeah. And David, just one quick final thought. I mean, obviously, you've got an eye on the oil price at all times. What's your thoughts at the moment of what the price of oil is doing? Where are you happy with? What's the minimum you're happy with, price-wise?
Well, let's put it this way. I'd be happier, the higher the better, obviously.
Yeah.
Some people wouldn't agree with that because of the price of the pumps and heating oil. But if you're obviously being in the oil business, you'd like to see high prices. That's what brings in the high revenues. But in answer, I think I know what you're asking. What are projects? What are they? What's the tension point? Where are they robust?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of the new fields are robust down to $35 a barrel easily. Okay. Production cost, I think I mentioned this earlier, about $8 to $10 for Wrestle.
Yeah.
A brand new field, no, or new equipment, so you'd expect it to produce very, very nicely in the early stages. And for, you know, a good sort of Europa, have got a well producing from the same formation, same area. It was going to be dry in 3 years, and 31 years later, it's still in production. So
yeah. It's
amazing. You know, I think the onshore is you can certainly deliver onshore, and it is really, really very, very underrated. With all the projects and nice projects that are still around, we're always keeping an eye open, but we've got enough that if we were to do any more acquisitions, it would be in-house, you know, projects of what we've already got an interest in.
Yeah.
Late stage production, so you know, well done. And this is a great, I think it's not just for Union Jack, but for onshore, it basically gives a message that you can find oil onshore, and you will get permission to produce from it. That's a great big tick in the box, I think, for the oil industry onshore UK, and hopefully people will be even more encouraged to invest in the United Kingdom. Well, why not?
Yeah, marvellous stuff. David, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll keep abreast of this, and we'll chat to you in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin. Bye-bye.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, it is Hummingbird Resources. At four, Jersey Oil and Gas. Wait a minute, what is Hummingbird? Hummingbird's up 2.2% a day, 23.25 pence. Jersey Oil and Gas, Jog, of course, ticker there. It's up 0.34% to 145.5 pence. At three, Union Jack Oil, of course, I spoke to David on the podcast, up 1.52% to 0.168 pence. At two, Botswana Diamonds, non-mover, 0.675 pence. Number one, most followed companies, Alba Mineral Resources, down 6.67% to 0.14 pence. All right, top five most liked RNSs came from the following companies. At five, Tech Capital, Lucid launch of new Bluetooth-enabled glasses. At four, it's Argo Blockchain, tenfold increase in 2019 annual revenue. At three, it's Echo Energy, Santa Cruz cert operation update. At, it was joint two actually, maybe I shouldn't read one out. It's Amazon, commencement of ESIA at Kismet. At two, of course, 88 Energy as well. That's 88 Energy quarterly report. And number one, most liked RNS came from Open Orphan, completion of merger with HVivo and readmission, which I talked about with Kyle on today's podcast. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.